Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
So, first of all, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Great to see you again.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
My pleasure. I watched Idiocracy this morning.
Oh, boy.
Dude, it fucking holds up. It holds
Does
up.
Does it? Okay.
Oh, my God. It's funny.
It's nice.
I never saw the whole thing before. It was one of those movies that I just, for whatever reason, I just never saw the whole thing. It was just...
Well, it kind of... Yeah, it didn't have much of a release, so...
It didn't?
No, it was... I mean... To be fair, like, it was a weird movie. It was hard to market.
It's a funny fucking movie, man.
Oh,
it's
thanks.
Funny. I mean, I watched it in the gym while I was working out. I was cracking up.
Oh, nice to hear.
It was really good. It was, like, surprisingly funny. There was some great stuff about it. When when it shows the very smart couple that's holding off and having children,
oh,
and
yeah.
the dumb people keep fucking.
Yeah, that was... I feel like really made the whole movie just to make that sequence. That was one of those rare times. Patrick and Darlene, the two actors, that it's the only time I think this has ever happened. I think they were auditioning them in pairs, and they auditioned, and I kind of looked at like two or three more people and then said, okay, let's just cast them. It's never going to get better. That guy was so good. Patrick Fisher, yeah.
It was such a good movie, man. It's just like...
Thanks.
And it's so interesting, like, looking at the world in 2022. It's like the only thing you missed was social media.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking about all the stuff I missed. I feel that movie was... I feel like it was cursed to begin with. Everything that went wrong went wrong. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. Like, and it was... So many things, like we shot it here in Austin. It's supposed to take place in a drought, and it was like the rainiest summer. We had to keep killing grass, which feels really awful to do.
Oh, God.
But we...
How do you do that?
Oh, yeah, you put a giant piece of, like, tarp and cardboard over it for, like, two nights or something. But then sometimes they have to put gasoline on it or something.
Oh.
It just feels horrible to kill grass. Yeah, I don't know. And then I feel like the curse of the movie kind of just spread out into the world or something. But I was just thinking about this because I have a hard time watching it because it just brings back so many stressful memories. But
because it was difficult to make?
Yeah, it was just, we were, you know, barely had an impossible schedule. And then in post, you know, they just cut, we had a bad test screening and they just cut the effects budget down and... But, I mean, you know, they did pay for the movie to get made, so I appreciate it. But, yeah, I was just thinking that, so there was the wardrobe woman, whatever, I don't know, what do you, costume designer is the official title. She, you know, she had a limited budget also, and for the shoes, so this was, we shot it in 2004. She tells me, okay, there's a startup, and it was Crocs, but they weren't out in the world yet. But it was a small company, and she goes, look at these, are these horrible plastic shoes with like holes in them. She said, we could really save a lot of money, just put everyone in these things. And then I said, well, what if by the time the movie comes out, what if these become popular and people are wearing them? She said, oh, these are never going to become popular. No one would ever wear these things. They're horrible. And then, yeah, there you go. And then, but then it took 2 years for the movie to come out. Then everyone's, but then people are going like, oh, that's pretty funny that you put everyone in Crocs.
They did become popular, right?
Yeah, and then they're not around much anymore, but they were really popular.
Oh, they're really popular right now. They came
back.
They came back in the last like 2 years all of a sudden.
What do you mean? Who's wearing them?
Post Malone had a deal with them. I think Justin Bieber
really?
Did too. People are putting like pins on them and stuff. They're very popular right now.
Pins?
Yeah, like
oh, wow.
Little, they're like little like pins, yeah.
Oh, like shirt pins?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I should stop talking shit.
I know people wear them. A lot of guys wear them like in camps. You bring them to camp, like they're camp shoes.
Oh.
They wear Crocs around camp because they're light. You know, if you're wearing like hiking boots all day and then you're camping, you wear Crocs at night when you're hanging around the campfire.
Pins. You get Lyme's disease.
So this is a new thing?
I've only seen it popping up recently.
I'd heard they were in bankruptcy
Crocs.
Like 5 years ago or something. Maybe I heard wrong. Wow.
Maybe they were. Maybe somebody came in with funding and
took a distressed property. And
I don't get it. I was always confused. Like, there's so many options for shoes. Why would you ever buy those?
There's all kinds of slippers you could have.
Yeah. I don't, there's no need for those.
I don't get them for camping, though. Like, can't you going to get, like, ticks all over your... I don't know.
No, I think the idea is...
put socks on?
Like, hunters wear them. So, like, when you're in the woods and you're hiking, you're wearing these, like, very kind of rigid hiking boots. And then when you're just around the campfire,
oh, okay.
they wear these little Crocs.
Okay.
Because they weigh nothing. You know, they're very light.
Yeah, they are light. Yeah.
And they provide you with protection from sticks and shit.
Oh, okay.
And they wear them, like, you know, over socks.
I see.
So they're horrific looking.
They don't look good.
What is this?
That's why I wanted them in the movie.
What the fuck is this?
They're $600 Crocs. These are fashion Crocs.
Cut the fucking shit.
I thought they were fake. They are.
Those are real?
Fake. These are real. Oh,
$600 yeah. Crocs with a some kind of a heel. What does the bottom of that heel look like? Is it
peg?
Like a peg, like a nail. It's like a nail is going through. That is so strange.
Oh God.
You know what I don't get? The strap.
Prediction correct.
What's the story with the strap at the top of the foot?
Sport mode.
Do they all have straps? Because like, the one thing about a slipper.
When you need to run and you got you need to do some action.
You ain't doing shit in those things.
Put it on your heel so it doesn't fall off.
God.
Sprinting.
Wait, $600? Is that how much?
Yeah, they're real. $600. That's how dumb people are. Put that in your new movie.
Yeah, I know. I wish I could remake that.
What would you do different?
Again? Well, like you said, I probably would have had more staring at phones and stuff. I mean,
nobody saw that coming, though.
Yeah. Well,
which
there's
is
also
wild,
yeah.
right? Because you filmed it. It was released in what, 2005?
2006. Filmed it in 2004, yeah.
So if you think about, like, phones, back then it was all flip phones.
Yeah, they were starting to come out with the Nokia. But, yeah, the iPhone I don't think was there yet.
That was 7.
It was about to come out.
Yeah. And even then, like, everybody thought that was kind of like a novelty. Nobody ever thought it would be, like... almost a requirement for life.
Yeah, and also I wrote it in 2000. I started writing it in 2001, and then it's writer Eitan Cohen. I wrote a draft with him. I wrote an outline, and then so that was like 2002, I think, or 2003 that we wrote it. So it was like pretty far away from all this stuff happening.
That's the only thing you missed, though. I mean,
yeah, I
dumbing down of people nailed.
Yeah, I was thinking of it like, so I had the idea in the 90s, but I remember in 2001, in the summer, it was the year 2001, I'd seen the movie 2001 again and thought, wouldn't that have been funny if that movie, instead of everything being pristine, advanced civilization, it was like giant Walmarts and the Jerry Springer show, and like, what if that movie made in the 70s was actually that accurate? And I just kind of thought of a graph of like everything from whenever that movie was made, like 71 to the year that it was, 2001, if you just kept that progression going and just like more crass, foul language in the mainstream, more like just everybody getting dumber and dumber and just advertising everywhere. I don't know. It was just sort of a – I also – wrote it. I owed Fox a screenplay, and I pitched two or three different things, and they said, "Oh, that's the commercial one. That's one you should make." And I didn't think they would make it. It was fun to write.
Why didn't you think they would make it?
It just seemed too weird. I don't know. But you know, they saw it. Anything in the future sounds fun and like a big broad comedy. It was more fun to write than it was to make. I mean, nothing against anybody involved. It was just like a very difficult schedule, and a lot of stuff went wrong. Had 65 speaking parts in it.
Wow.
Which you don't even, when you're writing, you just, oh, and then there's this, and it's like, oh, yeah, you have to cast every one of those people.
Well, it's still funny. It's still funny. It really, really holds up. It's excellent.
Well, thanks.
I remember moving to L.A. in 1994, and I got a... I think someone I knew at MTV hooked me up, and they gave me a VHS tape of all the Beavis and Butthead episodes, and I didn't have cable hooked up yet.
Oh,
so
wow.
My TV was hooked up, but cable wasn't hooked up yet, and so I was watching VHS tapes of Beavis and Butthead, and I remember me and this girl that I was dating at the time laughing our fucking ass off. I didn't even have furniture. I just had a big TV, and we were sitting on the carpeted floor just crying, laughing at Corn Julio.
Oh, okay. So you got to the good ones then. Yes. Yeah, by that season, we started to find our stride. Yeah, that was fun to do. That was, were you doing did you have a gig at MTV? Or
no, I did at one point in time. I did MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour, and then I auditioned for another show at MTV. And the negotiations of that actually wound me getting up on a Fox show called Hardball, which got canceled. Then I got News Radio.
Oh, okay.
So that was how I moved to L.A. But I was still in contact with someone at MTV, and they hooked me up.
Yeah, I thought I remembered some MTV association with you.
Yeah, that was what it was. It was like they were trying to do a thing with me, but MTV was like insanely cheap back then. Oh, I think they wanted to give me $500 for a pilot, and if the pilot went, I would be exclusive to them for several years. So like they would own me for several years exclusively for $500, which is hilarious.
Well, I think the way Dan Cortez got out of his deal, I don't know this for sure.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Oh, I don't know. But they had a deal with him that actually violated labor laws. It was so like it might have been the same thing you're talking about, where it's actually might have even been slavery laws that it violated. But, yeah, they were really egregious. They just would. Yeah, it was.
Well, you know why they did that? They did that because they created a few stars that became huge stars, and they felt like those stars left, and they made these people stars, but they didn't profit off of it. So, like, Dennis Leary was one of them, and Pauly Shore was another one. Like, you know, they had
so
Totally Pauly.
He got away.
Yeah.
Well,
so he did Totally Pauly, and then Totally Pauly, he left that and wound up doing all these big movies. And then Leary was sort of the same thing. You know, he did those little snippets where he would, like, rant to the camera.
Yeah, those were really good. Those were popular.
And he was on Remote Control, too. Remember Remote Control?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him on, I think, Comedy Central. Well, it was called the Comedy Channel. And then it was about to be Comedy Central.
So I think that was their overcorrection. Their overcorrection from losing guys like Pauly Shore was to create something where they
overcorrected on me.
I forgot about that Dan Cortez guy.
Yeah.
That show was great.
MTV Sports, yeah. He was a huge star for a while.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I don't know what happened to him.
How does that happen? Where a guy just is everywhere and then...
Yeah, he was like the heartthrob. It seems like it... Yeah, he was... I don't know when it fell off, like 95 or something.
Yeah.
At some point, he just disappeared.
I don't know what he does now.
Maybe he's got some great gig.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know about.
Find him. Where's Dan Cortez?
I mean, I found his Instagram.
Seems
like he's hanging out.
Where's he at? Let me see what he's at.
Is it Cortez with a...
There he is.
An S.
Just seems like a normal guy now.
Dude, hanging out. Oh, wow. Posting old stuff.
Oh, Bill Murray.
Wow.
I wonder how you become that guy. What was his...
How you become Dan Cortez?
I think
he was working like on a set or something like that, and then someone had the idea to put him on the show.
Mm. He started acting after that, and then... I don't know.
Well, I hope he's having fun. So how did you guys wind up with Beavis and Butthead there?
So I had... I was making these animated shorts in my house and just mailing out VHS tapes of them. And there was a show called Liquid Television. Well, I made three shorts before. Beavis and Butthead was the fourth one I'd made. And the first three had gotten, like the first one I made was on a show on Comedy, it was called the Comedy Channel. Night After Night with Alan Havey.
I remember Alan Havey.
Yeah, and then I'd gotten in some animation festivals, and so people were starting. There was a show called Liquid Television on MTV that was on Sunday nights, and they would license animated shorts. So I got like three or four of mine on there. It all happened very quickly. Like there were gonna. They asked me to send my first three, and I said I have a new one, and it was Beavis and Butthead, and then it. So it got on that show, and then there was a long, weird, cryptic negotiation where they said they want to buy it, and I said what for, and like, and then I negotiated. It was Colossal Pictures did Liquid Television, and then finally they said it's over. Oh, it was a long, ugly thing, and. Then finally MTV came to me directly. I still didn't know what they were going to do with it. I thought those little station IDs or something. Mm. And I was elated. I was like, this is amazing. I'm just making these things in my house outside of Dallas, and it's going to be on MTV. That's amazing. And then I sold it. I sold the whole thing to him for something like $18,000.
The whole property, everything?
Yeah, I mean, I retained something that you'd never see any money from, but I was able to get it back later, years later. But
how'd you do that?
Just because they needed me to do it, and I just, you know, but it was, yeah, I sold it. This was after months of negotiating, and I'm like, well, I was animating everything by myself. It would take me like 6 to 8 weeks to make 2 minutes. And after two Beavis and Butthead shorts, I was kind of out of ideas anyway. So I thought, like, okay, this will be my, you know, admission fee to show business. I'll just sell this off just to meet people and have them know about me. And I, you know, after, like, I went to different lawyers, and they're like, there was this mob lawyer in Dallas who was just like, don't sign it. And I said, well, then I just don't do this. Like, I mean, I don't regret it, because I think they were ready to walk away. It'd been months, you know, like 5 or 6 months, which I guess in show business isn't that long of a negotiation all the time. But yeah, then they flew me up there, and then they started talking about we're going to do 65 episodes, and I was saying, okay, am I going to be involved? And they said, of course, it's your baby, and you know, but they didn't say any of that until they already owned it. They didn't want to. Maybe it was part of the, you know, the whole Pauly Shore of it all, and those people that had gotten out of there. But they did. Their lawyer had all the bad intentions of a good lawyer, but she wasn't all that great and didn't know animation. So there were some big holes in the contract that I was able to
exploit.
Exploit later. And, yeah, she thought that I was going to be doing all the animation myself. So there was like a per minute fee that was like three seasons in. My manager, Michael Rotenberg, who's also a lawyer, said, hey, this thing says they owe you a ton of money. So yeah, I was able to get it back, and now I own it like 50-50 with them. So
oh, okay.
That was after the movie, and they wanted a sequel and all that stuff.
And so this movie that you got coming out, when did this start getting developed?
Let's see. I had the idea for it a long time ago. It was really about 3 years ago. And then right before the lockdown, because it was Friday the 13th, March 2020, I had lunch with Chris McCarthy and Kyes Hill-Edgert, the Paramount Plus guys, and just sealed the deal right then, and then made the entire movie with everyone on Zoom and Evercast.
So when you pitch a movie, like a Beavis and Butthead movie, are you pitching, are you just saying, look, I want to do a Beavis and Butthead movie? Are you saying, this is what happens with Beavis and Butthead? Like, what's the process?
Well, with this one, with the sequel, they've been wanting a sequel for years, and I've pitched different, usually.
When did you make the first one?
First one came out in 96.
So it was like a couple years, was it like?
So the show, the short first aired in 92. The series started in March of 93. So the show had been on a while before the movie came out, like three years. They wanted it sooner. But
and when did they stop? When did you stop doing the television show?
Fall of 98.
Oh, wow.
So it was off for a while. But yeah, I usually write an outline. I think that's, I don't think I pitched either of them. I think I just started writing outlines, for the first one and for this one, too. Then there was almost a sequel in 2001, and then violated another contract with me, and I got really pissed and said no movie. And
Jesus.
Yeah. Now I don't know what MTV even is. And they've sort
is
of been
still
absorbed.
There?
Yeah, the beginning of the movie, they have a whole thing with the astronaut and the flag.
Really?
Yeah.
So MTV is now mostly that, like, Rob Drydeck show, right? That's basically the whole channel.
Oh, I don't even, like, every now and then a show comes along that's a hit. Like, it was like, after Beavis, I don't know, it was like Tom Green, then Jackass, then Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Like, there's always a show that.
Jackass started at MTV?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, that was, that,
wow.
That came along and saved him for a while.
Of course, Tom Green.
What was the, well, Jersey Shore was huge.
Was that MTV too?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. Yeah, so they fucking gave up on music videos.
I mean, completely.
That's what it used to be. It was the music video channel. We would go there to watch. Do you remember when they released Michael Jackson's Thriller? And like the release of a movie. Like, everybody watched it. I want to know, like, how many people watched Michael Jackson's Thriller the day it came out? Because I want to say I was in high school at the time. It was somewhere around that range. And it was a thing that everybody was talking about. Like, you have to watch
huge.
It.
Huge. And it was, I remember being at an amusement park and seeing a guy who's just dressed up and had the hair of Michael Jackson and girls screaming, even knowing it wasn't Michael Jackson.
Just the way he looked. Yeah.
Yeah, just that a guy looked like that. But you had to have cable to watch it, right? They wouldn't. And then they played it on regular TV eventually, but it was so huge. I mean,
it was so huge, it's hard to imagine.
I remember going
anything.
Over someone's house to watch it, yeah.
Because there wasn't that many channels back then.
Yeah.
So, like, when something was on that was, like, a big deal, everybody watched it. So, like, a good hit television show today, I don't know how many millions of views it gets, but it's not a lot.
I don't know. It used to be, the numbers are way down, like...
Yeah, the
when you had a network hit show, you'd get 10 to 20 million.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, a big show like Seinfeld or something like that. Yeah, I'm sure. Friends. Yeah, those they got shit tons of people watching them, which that just doesn't happen anymore now. It has to be like the Super Bowl for something like that now.
Yeah. There was a while where American Idol, I think, was getting those numbers, but I don't think any scripted show does.
But that was a big thing for MTV, was these videos that they would have. And they would have video premieres. So they'd have a premiere, you know, like David Bowie, video premiere. And everybody would be like, oh, got to be there for the premiere. And there was no DVRs back then either. So either you VCR'd it, either you recorded it, which most people didn't. If you were a real wizard, you knew how to program your VCR. Remember those days?
Yeah, I briefly knew how to do that, but... sometimes I just get a really long one and just leave it turned
right.
on right before.
Yeah, you do that, right? yeah, you do low resolution, like a 6-hour recording.
If you unplugged them, the clock would go off. Mm-hmm. You'd have to reset it.
Yep, everybody's clock was always flashing. You go over people's houses, the clock in the VCR was always flashing.
That was one of the gags I wanted to have in Idiocracy. I don't think we did. Was just that everywhere you see just 12... like, I think I wanted a big clock tower like Big Ben with just a 12. I don't know if I haven't even looked if that's even in there. I don't think it is.
When you when you make a movie like that and you're done, like, what is the feeling like? Is it like did we do enough? Is it what you wanted? Because I've got to imagine, like, vision and then execution, and then when it's over, like, what does it feel like?
It's a very strange mixed feeling. It's like, you know, like the first one I did was a Beavis and Butthead movie, and I remember it's when your whole life, like however many hours a day, is just fucking with it and editing it and making it in a sound mix and everything. And I think the last final thing was the final mix, and I remember walking out of that place just, I should feel happy it's finally done, but it just said like icky, like, oh shit, I missed something. Or it's a really weird feeling, and sometimes it's better than others. Sometimes it's sick to your stomach. But it's always you want, that's the other reason I think I don't always like to watch something after it's done because I'm going to go, oh, shit, I should have changed that.
Or yeah.
Done that better. But, yeah, it's a very odd feeling. I mean, it's good to be done, but so many, it's just, like, icky.
Well, it just seems like it's such an enormous amount of time of your life gets put into it, and it's got to be hard to see what it actually looks like. Because you're going over the minutia of it, you're editing it, you wrote the lines, you edited them, you watch people do it, cut, let's take two, take three.
Yeah, you've seen 100 people audition for each part. You've heard the dialogue over and over again. You don't know if it's funny anymore. You can't tell. And also all those hours you're spending on it are to change things. That's all. You're just constantly tweaking and
right.
And so to say it's done, you get it's like a feeling of withdrawal, really. Like it's sort of even if you're really happy with it, it's sort of like you're just so used to doing that, and to stop suddenly is just you kind of want to do it more. You just want to go back and keep editing. I like editing, and it's fun to do.
But finishing editing is the hard part.
Yeah, when you're to just let it go and, you know, not know if you have a good test screening, that helps, but you don't always do that. Like with a TV show, you don't, just like whoever's in the, and if the sound mixers don't think it's funny, if people working on it aren't laughing. And with animation, like especially when I was doing the shorts, like the first short I did, you record the sound first, and I remember thinking, okay, that's a pretty funny take. I think I got it, something good here. But then you have to, the way I read the track, with a stopwatch, you'd find every syllable and put it on exposure sheets. So you're listening to it about two or three times as many syllables as there are in it, before you even start drawing. And so by the time you're done, you have no idea if it's funny or, you know, I would just have to keep remembering there was a time when I knew this was funny. And just keep going back to that.
Do you ever like take a few days off and then try to watch it fresh?
Yeah. Yeah, that helps if you can afford to do that. Yeah. I've gotten more used to just trusting if there was ever a moment where something was good, interesting or funny, and if it doesn't seem like it now, just knowing, okay, that did hit me that way at one point. There must be something to it.
Dude, I laughed so hard today watching the chart of the people and all the babies that they had. For whatever reason, that scene killed me. And then the smash cut to the intelligent people that still weren't having kids and still putting it on. Then they start bickering about whose fault it is, like, as they're getting older.
Yeah, we can't have a child now. Not with the market the way it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so funny. Because that's real. You know, Elon Musk warns about that all the time. He's like, we are in a very dangerous moment where people don't realize that they're not having enough children.
I know. Well, now it's sort of, I remember there's Melinda Gates had written something about this, like, or maybe I read a quote about, like, when as countries go from third world to first world, I guess they stop, they don't have kids as much.
Well, women have careers and they don't want to have children as often. And they also don't need children to help them with the family business. So that's not like in some countries, people are having children because they need a workforce.
Yeah. Yeah, I had it. We were at some point making that movie. I mean, a lot of the people playing dumbasses were just my friends. Like I have a lot of dumb looking friends, I guess. But at some point we were location scouting this place, and it was I guess it was a reform school of some kind, like a juvenile delinquent something or other. I don't know. You're not allowed to call them reform schools anymore.
You're not?
It was called like the Institute of Technological, and it had like some fancy names kind of down by, maybe I won't dox the place. It was outside of Austin, just outside of Austin, but I didn't know what it was. And I thought, I was just looking around saying, oh, these people would be good extras. Like when we're, and we had a couple scenes with, I don't know, 250 extras, and one was that ass movie, which we actually had to shoot the ass.
How much footage did you get of that guy's ass?
Too much, but But I wanted just a nondescript ass, by the way. Like, and they, I had to look at Polaroids. A crazy thing happened, actually. So the dude, it's like, okay, let's get this over with. We should, like, set up the camera, shoot the guy's ass. And my cinematographer and I are just kind of going, okay, that's good. Let's just, I know we shot like 10 minutes probably. But anyway, the years later, the guy... I'm introduced to this guy and his fiance, and I'm looking at him and I go, oh, hey, and he kind of looks at me like, and I realize who it is, and I go, oh, I said, because I'm starting to say, I think I've met you, and then later he goes, yeah, she doesn't know.
Why would she care?
I think she does now. I well,
that's
I heard
a
she
bad
does
start
now,
to a relationship. Yeah. If you're about to get married to a lady and you can't tell her, hey, they filmed my ass for 10 minutes for Idiocracy. Oh, but why would he want to not tell that? That doesn't make any sense.
I think he eventually did. But at that point, he was kind of giving me the – maybe it was like early on in the relationship.
He was trying to be taken seriously?
Yeah.
Maybe he had like a real job.
Oh, he did, yeah.
What was he?
He worked in some kind of like finance.
Thing. Yeah, that's probably it. He was Mr. Serious.
Yeah.
What a bummer that must be.
We played that movie though, and like I was – we had all those, you know, the juvenile delinquents, whatever, in there. They might have been like, I don't know how old they were, but we put it up there, and I'm thinking like, okay, I got to somehow get everyone to laugh, like just laughing hysterically. We start playing it, and they're just laughing hysterically. Like it's nothing but that guy's butt on the screen. And I was just thinking, we should just release ass and stop writing a script and everything. Like I think we're already there. Just release this thing. But... yeah, anyway.
There was just so many moments like that in that movie where it's like, it's. I wish I saw it when it came out because I was wondering, like, how's it going to hold up? Because there's some movies that just don't hold up that good, but it held up magically.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
It was very, very funny.
The 10-year anniversary in 2016, there were a few screenings, and I watched pieces of it. But yeah, I mean, I was standing outside the theater at a couple of them, and I could hear people laughing. People seemed to, I mean, they sold out whatever the two ones that I went to, so that was nice.
That's got to be a good feeling to just sit there and watch after all that work, after all the editing and all the weirdness of trying to figure out if it's still good, to watch people that have never seen it before, have no idea what's coming, laugh hysterically.
Yeah, it's a really, I mean, especially something like that that was, both that and Office Space were so difficult to make and didn't do well right away, you know? So it's just like, oh, God, like all that
Office
work
Space didn't do well right away either?
No.
Wow, that's crazy.
The Beavis and Butthead movie was a hit right away, but.
How the fuck was Office Space not a hit right away?
I mean, it was low budget, but it kind of basically made back its $10 million over its time in the theater, but yeah, it came in like eighth place.
Was that in the same time period? When was Office Space?
1999 it came out.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. So it was earlier.
But then, 2 years after it was in back when they did Blockbuster home video charts. It was like in the top 10 around Christmas. It was in the top 20 for off and on for a while, which was really nice.
That's a great fucking movie. It's a great fucking movie. I love how you use a lot of the same people over and over again, too.
Yeah. Well, you worked with Steven Root.
Like, oh, he's the best.
He's incredible,
Steven Root was a guy that was the only guy on set that was 100% completely different human being than who he was on television.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy when someone... And Steven Root, like, when he played Milton, just completely different. Like, I don't know, years I was talking to Ben Stiller, and he said, who played Milton? And I said, that's Steven Root. And he was like, what? He'd seen the whole thing and had no idea that was him, and he had met him and everything.
He does that in every movie he's in. But that he's a different human hanging out on the set. Like, he's a regular guy. And then he'd become Jimmy James, and he would become Jimmy James. I mean, it was a character that he developed. I mean, Jimmy James had tendencies. He had opinions. He had... Like, he had a whole, like, fucking biography for this guy.
Such a strong character. I, when I I saw that you weren't in the pilot, right? You came in the second or third episode or something?
I was, Ray Romano was the original me from the pilot.
Oh, okay.
From the pilot, rather. And Ray got fired, and then they brought in a second guy, luckily, and then that guy got fired. Because I didn't want to take the job from Ray, so I took the job from the guy who took the job from Ray.
Oh.
Which is good.
Oh, okay.
Better. Because Ray was my friend. It would suck.
Oh, wow.
Like, if Ray...
Oh, I didn't know that backstory.
Yeah, so obviously it worked out fantastic for Ray, because Everybody Loves Raymond, he did right after that. He got fired, then he's doing Everybody Loves Raymond.
I'm trying to think when that came out. I remember I had met Paul Sims in 94, and I was writing the King of the Hill pilot, and I was... or no, I guess 95 or 96, but I was... or I'd met him before. Anyway, he sent me a VHS of the pilot of News Radio, and I immediately called and said, "Who's the guy playing Jimmy James? That guy's incredible. Like, I've never seen him in anything." And then that led to him. Well, he auditioned for King of the Hill, and he was just clearly just really amazing.
No, he's amazing in everything.
You know, he did one of the most incredible things I've ever seen him do. As we had a table read, and Troy Aikman was going to do a guest appearance in King of the Hill, which he did, I think, but he couldn't do the first table read. And just at the last minute, I understand why Steven was a little pissed. He's like, someone said, "Okay, can you read Troy Aikman?" And he's like, "I don't know what Troy Aikman talks like. I don't know. I really? You're just springing me on this?" And he proceeded to do the best version of an athlete, pro athlete who can't act at a table read. I wish I had a tape of it. It was so genius. The levels of it, it was like he's doing a guy who can't act, but he's doing a good job acting, and he's throwing in an accent that sounds like a football player from Texas. And I don't know, it was just amazing.
He was great. And did you see that cowboy movie? I think it was a Coen Brothers film.
Oh, yeah.
Weird film where it was like a bunch of different snippets.
Yes, it's got Tim Blake Nelson in it.
Yes.
I saw that.
Yes.
I love that movie.
It was a great
movie.
That movie's
like, it's only one of the Coen Brothers, right? Wasn't that the first one?
I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jamie? Do you remember the film? But it was like...
it's so good.
It was multiple tragedies.
He's been in a few.
Wasn't No Country for Old Men recently with
Tim Blake.
I typed in Coen Brothers, and I'm trying to.
Type in Stephen Root cowboy movie.
It's only one of the brothers. I think it's, and Tim Blake Nelson's in it, and it's.
Brother Ferretto?
No.
Came out more.
That's
recently.
Another great fucking movie. Just type in Stephen Root cowboy film.
Oh, is that the one?
Well, go to his IMDb and we can find it. Right. But he played some fucking monotonous.
He's got a lot.
God,
of
his IMDb,
I know, that's
is
that's be a lot
Office
of
Space is right at the top, though.
Wait, is
hold on.
These are all too new.
It's fairly recent. It's like 2019, I think, or something. Let me see. Go down. It'll be.
Where is this here? I can't. Hold on. You're going too fast.
I know. Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
There we go.
Wait, bam.
Am I wrong? Is it?
Yep. 100%.
Oh, it is both. It is both Coen Brothers. I thought it was one of the ones that just one of them did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a really good one there.
Tim Blake Nelson is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
too.
He's so good.
You know what he's great in? But this movie is fucking really fun. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is so unusual, and Root's character is completely insane.
Yeah. So good.
It's just like it's one of those movies where you're like, what the fuck is this? But that's all of their movies. Their movies are so interesting.
Oh, yeah.
They're so weird.
They make so many. I haven't even seen them all. Tim Blake Nelson's brother was a producer on Idiocracy, actually.
Tim Blake Nelson is in a great Western called Old Henry. Have you seen Old Henry?
I haven't
seen
that one.
It's great. I don't want to give away. There's like a plot twist to it, and you go, what? But it's a really interesting old Western. But it's not funny at all.
Is it? Oh, is it a recent one?
Yeah, I want to say it's like 2020. Last year?
I wonder if Westerns are going to come back. Or,
that's
I
it.
Know, like...
That's Old Henry. That's fucking good. And that's one I just took a chance on. I was home and I was bored. And I was like, let me see what new movies are out. And I looked in iTunes and it was just there.
Oh, I think
and
I
it
saw
was
it.
Highly oh, rated. Wait. So I said, all right, let's check it out for a chance.
Is that Trace Adkins is in it? Oh, man, he's...
Yeah. So, and Stephen Dorff's great in it too. I had no idea what the movie was about, so I'm like, okay, let's just give it a chance, and it was really fucking cool.
Wow.
I love a good Western, though. I'm a sucker for a Western.
Oh, me too. I like Unforgiven.
Oh, Unforgiven's fucking fantastic.
It's like one of the greatest ever.
That was, like, in my opinion, that was like Clint Eastwood doing like a cleanup.
So yeah.
Like, you know, I did all these films that were kind of unrealistic about Westerns and cowboys. Let me come back and show you what it was probably really
like.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what, like, I get, like, watching, like, that's probably what a draw, like a shootout where people are actually screaming and freaking out that someone died. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that was incredible.
And this one guy who can just keep it together, and that's why he can kill everybody. He just doesn't freak out.
Yeah. I like the stylized ones, too, but that one was just, that blew my mind. It still, that one holds up.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I love all of his old Westerns. I love Outlaw Josey Wales. I love all the spaghetti Westerns.
I had the box set of the DVDs. I mean, anytime one of those would come on, I would just be glued to the set.
It's really incredible that moment in human history, like when people were making their way across the continental United States, became such a genre for film.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I guess.
There's not a lot of pioneer movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a few, but it's not nothing like the Westerns.
Listen, that they say there's like the Wild West only lasted like 8 years or something, the way it's like where it was really wild. Or something.
Is that real?
I guess it's all post-Civil War, right? I don't know. I shouldn't be talking. I'm not a historian on it. I just remember someone saying that it's like, it was like before it was really tamed. It wasn't that, but there's like a million movies about it.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with the gold rush, right?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was the reason why people were motivated to make their way out to those weird towns in, like, San Francisco and, like, all these places, Seattle. There were miners.
Lay down railroad tracks.
Yeah. It's just a very unusual time in history, but as a genre for film, it's such a rewarding genre because it's lawlessness.
Yeah.
So you can have this one person with morals and ethics who keeps the fucking town together, and then this bad guy who comes in and is trying to take over, and just such a, you know, it's such a classic story.
Yeah, just pure writing, you know, about, yeah, there's also a bunch of, Quentin Tarantino used to do a thing where he'd come to Austin and show, he has just a collection of prints of movies that no one's ever seen. Like, maybe now a lot of them are available, but, like, I remember around 2002, 2004, a couple of Westerns that didn't even have people I had heard of in it hardly, like, that were just incredible. I mean, like, I won't even try to describe them, but they were, like, on par with all those, whatever, Sergio Leone spaghetti Westerns.
And just totally unknown?
Yeah, unknown. I mean, some of them... Yeah, I remember there was one where this guy, he goes to a town, he's like a gunslinger, and the bad guys are coming, and they just desperately need him to save the town, and the guy, the mayor promises the guy his daughter if he can defend the town, and you kind of forget about it, and there's a big shootout, and everybody's happy at the end, and you think this is a happy ending, and then the guy goes, no, I got the daughter. Like, he's like, at the end of it, like, he's like, and you're like, whoa, this dude... wasn't really all they kind of make him not a hero at the end of it. It was really interesting, dark movie. I can't remember the name of it.
And probably what it was really like back then.
Right.
There probably were no real good guys.
Yes.
You know, when you have a time in history where the morals are completely eroded and you see mass atrocities committed left and right, like even like whatever the bar is for the good guys is probably quite a bit lower.
Yeah. Doesn't take much to tip the scales into horrible anarchy.
No, it's just it's so interesting how we romanticize those moments, though. Those moments, and like that's like one of the big. I mean, when we were kids, we played cowboys and Indians.
Oh yeah,
you know that was.
I don't know if that's allowed anymore, but that's what all.
I don't think so. I don't think you play an Indian unless you are one now.
We had the pop gun, and you watched Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people forgot Johnny Depp played Tonto.
Oh, that's right.
He got in trouble.
Oh,
people
he did?
Like, he's not an Indian. Yeah, people were
angry.
Is he
like 164th or something?
Is he?
I don't know.
No, not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just such a, I mean, so many shows. Bonanza, so many different television shows.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to make a comeback.
Deadwood.
Wasn't there a Western recently?
Yellowstone, kind of.
Yellowstone is
haven't seen that
modern,
yet.
1883.
Yeah, the prequel, right? Yeah, I haven't seen that. Is that good?
I haven't watched it. Yellowstone. I've heard it's good.
Yellowstone's fucking great.
I hear it's great. I got to watch it, yeah.
Yeah. Do you do much consuming of films and stuff when you're not making them?
I went through a long phase where I wasn't at all. And now I do. Yeah, now I try to watch a lot of stuff. But there's so much stuff, I can't keep up.
Yeah, it's impossible. People are always telling me about, oh, you got to see Euphoria. I'm like, how? How do
yeah.
I have to, where's my time? You tell me how. How I can watch this.
You know the thing that I just saw that made me absolutely want to watch it is there's an entire series of Rowan Atkinson trying to kill a bee. Have you seen that trailer for this thing?
Yeah. One bee?
I was laughing so hard at this thing.
What
yeah.
is it called?
I think it's called something the bee or something like that.
What?
We did a Beavis and Butthead episode where they try to kill a fly.
Mr. Bean? Man yeah. versus bee. Wow, look at that yeah. car he's got.
He just gradually fucks everything up more and more just trying to kill this one bee.
Is this a British film or yeah. it's a Netflix thing?
A Netflix, but it's a... There was
a Netflix series?
I'm Trevor from House Sitters Deluxe. Hello, sweet pea. It's Dad here. I managed to get a job. It means that we can still go on holiday together. Danny, I'll call you back.
So dumb. This guy has been doing slapstick for 1,000 years.
I guess I'm just like, I haven't seen anything like this in so long. It was so refreshing. They're going to make an entire series on this premise, which I just got to see how, I think he can pull it off.
Yeah,
I
probably.
Believe,
Man versus Bee. Jesus, that's a series?
Like, which you just, I haven't seen anything remotely like that.
He's an acquired taste. Like either yeah, you love that guy or you're like, what the fuck is this Mr. Bean guy?
It took me a little while and then I was all in.
Well, it's like,
well, you can watch
that
it in
style.
Small, like when you're not, you just kind of need something dumb to like fall asleep or something.
I would like to talk to him about his health.
Oh, is he?
No, because I have this Chevy Chase theory. My Chevy Chase theory is like, Everybody says Chevy Chase is an asshole. And I'm like, I bet Chevy Chase is in constant pain. Because if you think about all the times that Chevy Chase would fall down for decades, all of his comedy was him like doing something and falling into a pile of chairs and slipping off of a stage and landing on his neck, and he was constantly falling down. He was constantly slipping on a banana peel, feet first, up in the air, slams down on his head. That guy fell hundreds of times.
He fell every night on Saturday Night Live, didn't he?
Constantly, always.
I think he does have injuries, right?
Has to.
Like Johnny Knoxville has. So, like,
his dick's broken.
All of his dick's broken. He's beat up all kinds of ways.
Yeah, he did it to himself.
Yeah.
He did it in a different way. Like, yeah. he did it in
very,
a way where, like...
Like a Evel Knievel.
100% kind of... going to get hurt.
Yeah.
There's no controlling it. At least Chevy was responsible for his falls. He's getting thrown in the air by bulls and shit. Like, oh, my God, that guy gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
But the Chevy Chase one I'm fascinated by because when I found out that Chevy Chase was considered an asshole by so many people, I'm like, what? Fletch? That guy? He seems so cool. I'm like, how could he be an asshole?
Yeah, and I never
then
met him.
As I got older and I have this deep concern about brain damage and brain injuries from fighters and stuff. And then I was like watching him, like, how bad is he fucked up? Like, I guarantee you. He's thinking irrationally. I guarantee you he's very impulsive. I guarantee he has CTE. 100%.
Oh, all that stuff gets your Even if it's not hitting your head, it can.
Yes.
Oh.
It affects your impulse control. You know, a lot of guys that do that wind up being heavy drinkers or gamblers.
Oh.
They're like, the way I describe it is like, imagine if all day long you're like irritated, like,
yeah.
But you're going through life like that. So you're going through life constantly. And also, impulse control is fucked because of CTE.
I wonder, well, you know, all those. It seems like the UFC guys, the MMA guys, don't have that as bad as boxers, or do they? Like, maybe
no, they have it bad.
They just haven't gotten old enough yet.
There's plenty of guys that have it pretty bad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's guys that get out, and in boxing, there's guys get out. Like, Andre Ward is my favorite example. He's brilliant, eloquent, like, incredibly good at commentary and talking and explaining things. And the guy was a two-division world champion and an Olympic gold medalist, and he just decided, you know what? I'm getting out while the getting's good. I'm perfect. Oh. I'm in my 30s. He was in the prime of his career, world champion. He said, I think I could serve boxing better as an example of what's possible than as a guy who keeps fighting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Brilliant guy. And one of the best commentators ever. And that's rare, though, you know,
yeah,
for every guy like that.
Hang on too long.
Well, it's like, the thrill of doing that is so much more exciting than the thrill of doing anything else in your life. Imagine if, like,
yeah,
you know, you do this one thing that gets you to tens. And you got to remember, with Andre, there was no real agony of defeat. He was an undefeated world champion, an Olympic gold medalist. He's handsome, so his pristine face didn't get busted up.
Wow.
Really never got, other than Kovalev. Kovalev was the only guy that really hurt him in a fight. Never really got hurt bad. And even in that fight, he wound up winning.
He didn't get knocked out?
Nope. Oh. No, he won every fight. He was undefeated.
Yeah, and if he had stayed in, probably would have.
Who knows?
I mean, they usually stay in until they get knocked out, don't they?
Until something goes bad. Bernard Hopkins is a good example of that, but he was in his 50s when he finally started getting really, when he lost to Joe Smith Jr. and he fell through the ropes. But UFC fighters most certainly get brain damage.
Wow.
You can get out without it. It's possible. But, you know, we did a thing yesterday. We were going over NFL players with CTE. And they said 99% of NFL players that have been tested have CTE. 99.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's wild.
So is that almost worse than fighting?
I think it's worse. Because I think it's uncontrolled. Because with fighting, like, say, if you're a skilled fighter, you can choose to engage or not to engage. With MMA, I think it's better than boxing because you could choose to tie someone up and take them to the ground.
Yeah.
You know, there's options.
I guess that's what I had heard.
Yeah, there's options, but
people get.
The thing is, you're getting hurt in sparring. Sparring is hurting you almost as bad as the fights themselves. There's a lot of people that wound up getting really bad brain damage that never even fought. They just sparred a lot.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, sparring is hitting. You know, you're getting hit. It's just, that's where the brain damage comes from. Do you know people get CTE from jet skiing?
Really? From hitting the water?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you do hit the water pretty hard when you...
Yeah, we were on the lake the other day, and I was watching these guys, because there was a boat that was... we were on jet skis, too, but I don't fuck around like that. I just ride. They're fun to ride, right? I don't need to jump in the air and shit, and I had my daughter on my back, the back of the jet ski. But we're behind this boat... And these guys are, you know, they're making waves with this boat. Like, it's a wake surfing boat, you know, those things. So people get behind them on the boards.
Right.
And these guys were riding those waves on the jet skis, just, nyah, bang, nyah, bang. And they have these super-powered jet skis now. They're so fucking fast. And every time they land, it's like a car accident. It's like, boom.
Oh, God.
You know? So the mush inside your brain is just slamming against the wall. And that soft tissue that keeps your brain in place is all getting jumbled up.
Is that going all night while you live right on the lake, right?
Yeah, it's not going at night. Okay. The jet ski guys don't go at night. The boat guys, though. Occasionally, you get a boat that goes out at night. But, you know, a lot of the reasons why they do that is they go fishing at night. They do catfish.
Oh.
Yeah, or they bowfish, which is kind of cool. They take a boat, like a fishing boat, with lights hanging over the sides, and the fish come near the light.
Oh, they come just come for the lights?
They shoot it with bows and arrows. Yeah.
I want to try that. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, so you got into archery, huh? We were talking about, you saw the range that we have here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really addictive.
It is, right?
Yeah, started doing it in my backyard, and well, then I have a place outside of town with lots of room. But yeah, I still have never killed a mammal, but I figure I eat meat. Maybe also there's a really bad hog problem in,
your ranch.
Feral hogs, yeah, everywhere.
How bad is your ranch?
Well, right now, I mean, I don't know. There's some people that they kind of come and go. So, like about 10 years ago, some friends of mine went out there and hunted a bunch of them. But I mean, they'll come through, and it's just like a rototiller. Like they'll just rip everything up.
It's kind of crazy.
A friend of mine said that he was raising sheep. They killed like 20 lambs, and one night hogs came through and just
that's something that people don't realize. They're predatory.
Yeah. Yeah, first time I saw one, it's like big old tusks. Like they're a cross between, I guess, European wild boars that were brought over and escaped just domestic hogs, mm-hmm. I guess, that the Spanish brought over. And they get big, yeah.
Well, they're all the same animal, believe it or not. Pigs are a weird animal. And this is one of the reasons why pigs are weird. When you take a domestic pig, say a male domestic pig, and he's, you know, eating feed and whatever you give him, and then you open the gate and let him loose. Within weeks, he starts to to change.
They'll grow tusks and everything just by the conditions that they're putting?
Yes.
Oh, okay, that makes
Not
sense.
Not just tusks, but their face changes.
Yeah, they have a different face when
their nose extends.
Yeah, they get longer, yeah.
Yeah, see if you can find anything on this, because it's really fascinating.
I was just reading, there's a book, it's this author, Neal Stephenson. It's called, what's it called? Termination Shock. It's set in the near future where hogs are just out of control.
That's possible.
But he goes into the history of it. But I didn't know. So a regular hog would just start going wild if you...
I don't think there's another mammal like it, not that I've ever heard of, that when you release them into the wild...
They have
a physical transformation. Like a cat could become a feral cat, right? And then they act differently and they're afraid of people. But hogs... Their nose grows longer.
Yeah, they look different. They look like a wild boar.
Their fur changes. It gets thicker and bushier. Their tusks grow. So when you see those pigs,
they get that.
That's what they look like.
They get that face. Like,
it's wild. It changes their fucking face.
Wow.
And it changes their nose. I don't understand like what causes it. Well, I just Googled this. When domestic pigs change in the wild. Okay, there. Just check that. Let me see that. Right there.
It didn't say much more than what
you said,
though.
Is good right here. It says domestic pigs can quickly revert to wild pigs. Although domestic pigs, as we know it today, took hundreds of years to breed. Just a few months in the wild is enough to make a domestic pig turn feral. It will grow tusks, thick hair, and become more aggressive.
Wow.
Just a few months.
That's crazy.
And their nose changes. Like it grows and extends their snout.
Yeah, they look more evil.
It's the same genus. They're all called Suscrafa. But obviously it's just like dogs, right? Say a dog like a German Shepherd. There's big German Shepherds and small German Shepherds. If you breed the big ones, you make a big one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it is with wild pigs too. But with domestic hogs and wild pigs, it's not like it's a hybrid. They're literally the same animal.
Oh, okay. I also heard, the ones that my friends hunted out of my place, they're like, you don't get the bacon off the, when they're wild, there's like, they're still really good, but not as,
they're not fat.
As fatty. Yeah,
they're like very lean, and they're darker meat too. It's like almost like a reddish meat.
Yeah, it looks different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the ones that you get are in the supermarket are essentially like veal. They're just sitting
there
in a pen.
Pampered,
and they're fattening them up until they're ready to slaughter them. I mean, that's really where you get bacon from. Bacon is from obese pigs.
Yeah, it only comes. They have to be super obese to get that. Yeah, it comes off. Was it like off their rib cage or something?
I don't know what the difference is between pork belly and bacon is.
Bacon is.
Pork belly, I think bacon is almost like brisket.
Similar. There's a writer on The Simpsons, I forget who it was. He wanted to see, he loved bacon so much, he wanted to see if it was possible to eat so much bacon that he doesn't want anymore. So he did an experiment on a weekend and just woke up on Saturday, started making bacon, just eating bacon. And there's a ton of salt in it, and his tongue and his cheeks started swelling up, and he had to actually go to the hospital because he's having trouble breathing. But while he was in the hospital,
Christ.
He said he still wanted more bacon while he was in the hospital. He never found the point where he didn't want more bacon.
Oh my God!
I forget the guy's name.
That much like, salt? There's really that much salt in bacon?
Yeah, I guess that's the. It's cured salt.
Yeah, that's what makes it bacon.
Yeah, like it's like a
pork belly versus bacon. What's the difference? The most basic difference between pork belly and bacon is the pork belly cut isn't smoked or cured, and it only comes from the belly of the pig, the softer meat that is interchangeable with most recipes that call for pork, whereas bacon can be derived from the belly and is cured and sometimes smoked. Oh, so it is the same area. It's just turned into bacon. So streaky pork bacon is pork belly, but pork belly isn't bacon. Instead, pork belly is the whole slab cut from the fleshy underside of a pig. Streaky pork bacon is cut from this slab, and pork belly is unsmoked and uncured. Have you ever gone to Dai Due in town? Have you ever eaten there?
Oh, that sounds familiar. No.
It's a fantastic restaurant made by the head chef is this guy, my friend Jesse Griffiths. And Jesse, who's been a guest on the podcast before too, is he runs a school. What is his school called again? He's got like it's basically a school where he teaches people from scratch and takes them. He does it in very limited numbers. This new school of traditional cookery. So he takes people out. From scratch, this is how you shoot a gun. This is how you pull a trigger. This is how you sight a rifle. This is how you kill a pig. This is how you butcher the pig.
Oh, wow.
This is how you cook the pig. And he's an incredible chef. His restaurant, Dai Due, is one of my absolute favorite places in Austin.
I think I have heard of
it. It's amazing.
Where is it?
I want to say it's on Congress.
I have heard of this.
No, we'll pull it up.
Yeah, when I saw the...
Pull it up just to... Let them know. What's it on? Does it say what streets it on?
Oh, yeah, over there on, Oh, that's right by,
Just give me a second.
That used to be,
read out
it's by Hoover's.
It's called Manor. It just disappeared when I got close. Manor Road off of.
Manor Road.
Yeah, that's east of Texas.
Okay.
Manor? Yeah, that's over, by Hoover's. I go to Hoover's
But it's the way you spell it is Daidue, right? Is that how you spell it? It's fucking great. He makes a ceviche with antelope, with Texas antelope. it's a Neil Guy ceviche.
So is the antelope raw then? Or
yes.
Cured? Oh, okay.
Yes. It's like if you would imagine a version of like tartare, like a beef tartare, but because it's raw, but think more in terms of like ceviche where it's cured with lime and he'll put it on like chips. You know, like you'll serve it with tortilla chips. It's fantastic.
Wow, I've never heard of ceviche that wasn't fish.
He has fish and chips from local Texas fish, like Texas redfish.
So it's all kind of...
All local.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all, like a lot of it is wild, like wild game.
Well, antelope, yeah.
Neil Guy antelope.
Wow.
And Texas is an interesting place in that you can serve wild game in restaurants commercially. Which is not legal in
a lot of
other places.
Oh.
Most places, like, say if you go to a restaurant, say in, like, Michigan. I don't know about Michigan. Like, California, good example. And you buy elk. You're not getting elk from the United States. You're getting elk most likely from New Zealand.
The laws just...
Yeah, they can...
That's weird.
You know, New Zealand is a weird place because New Zealand doesn't have any predators and almost all the big game mammals that are brought into New Zealand were brought in into the, I believe it was the 1800s. They
elk aren't native.
No. Yeah. They have stag there, which is a very similar animal to elk, very similar tasting, but... They're similar looking too, but they brought these animals over there to create like a wild game preserve for Europeans. So the Europeans would come over, we've gone to New Zealand to hunt, and they were hunting these animals that didn't have any predators, and so the populations boomed to the point unfortunately, they have to cull the populations of these incredibly nutritious, delicious, beautiful animals, and they shoot them and just leave them there. Like they'll gun them down with helicopters.
Oh, so they're not even.
There's so many
going
of them.
To waste?
There's no predators. So you have these mountainous, beautiful landscapes filled with these animals, and it comes the time where they have to keep the populations in check. So they do farm them, and they do sell. They sell a lot of lamb. A lot of lamb comes from New Zealand, and a lot of elk comes from New Zealand.
Did you ever see that cane toad documentary?
No.
That's another example of they brought these cane toads to
Australia?
Yeah, to Australia to get beetles off the sugar canes, and the sugar canes grow taller there, so they didn't even get the beetles, and then they just reproduced, no predator.
Oh, and then they brought in cats to deal with the cane toads, I think.
Oh, I think they did, yeah. But this documentary,
the cats are out of control now.
Australian hillbillies and just millions of cane toads. It wasn't supposed to be funny, and then it became like a viral VHS hit in the early 90s. But yeah, anytime they bring up species, like nature's so delicate, you can't fuck with it.
Well, that is all of Australia, and that is all of New Zealand. Australia is filled with non-native animals.
Jared Diamond writes a lot about, he wrote Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Yeah.
Like, he writes a lot about, Australia's like a really interesting example of a lot of just, humans wrecking everything.
Yeah, as is New Zealand. New Zealand is, God, it's such a beautiful place, but. I've never been either.
It looks incredible.
It looks incredible. I mean, that's where they did.
All the surf pictures from there.
Lord of the Rings was shot there. Yeah, which is, seems like it's perfect. It's a very small population and a fucking staggeringly beautiful landscape.
Wow.
But that's a very big spot for hunters. They go down there and they, they go to hunt these animals that don't have natural predators.
Does this guy who serves antelope, does he go hunt in West Texas? Like
he goes to South Texas, I believe, is where he gets the Neil guy. Yeah. He also will buy Neil guy. You can buy Neil guy from ranches. There's certain ranches that commercially sell Neil guy. But the way they do it is they have these wild free range animals, and they don't like have them in pens, and they go out and they hunt them commercially, like long range rifles and stuff like that. Oh, they shoot them and then they collect them, and then they'll sell like a whole Neil guy to a restaurant, and then they'll, like, Jesse will part it up and, make steaks and roasts and all these different things from it. But his restaurant is so good. But it's the point is, like, one of the things that he loves is wild hogs. And he has all these different recipes for wild hogs. He makes sausages and loins and all this different stews and all kinds of I don't know if he makes stews. I might have made that up. But he makes a bunch of different really cool recipes with wild pigs.
Well, it's really good. And there's, like I say, I haven't hunted yet. I think if I do it, I'll do it with a bow. But
you think so?
Just, I don't know, something about a gun. Just, I don't know, doesn't seem as
sporting.
Yeah, right. I guess just because I love shooting the bow so much.
It's fun to shoot a bow,
but I guess you're more likely to not
miss.
Yeah,
that would feel
bad.
Yeah, it's. this is coming from someone who hunts with a bow almost exclusively. But I did shoot a wild pig last year in California with a rifle.
Oh, with a rifle?
It's so much more effective.
Yeah.
You just get it in your crosshair, boom!
Yeah, I was working on, like, 20 years ago, it was going to be like a Caddyshack-type movie about hunting guides and just hunting in general.
Mm.
And started watching hunting videos, and it's a funny world. I mean,
it's very, an interesting world.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
There's different worlds, though.
Yeah, there are.
Hunting.
Yeah.
Like, there's the Texas, people that sit over feeders.
Yeah.
So this is, they call it hunting, but it's really just harvesting. You're just shooting.
Yeah.
You just sit in a stand and you wait, and then the feeders go off, and the deer gravitate towards the feeders, or the hogs gravitate towards and you just blow them away. So there's that way. And then there's big game hunting in the West, which is like, you really have to be an athlete. Like, is your
That's when I start. Like, some of these, like, there's a guy who, with a traditional bow, kills a bear, and the bear almost jumps in the blind with him. And I'm like, okay, that's actually pretty fair. Like, you're taking a
sort
risk
of.
There. I mean, sort, taking, not completely, a little tiny risk.
It's like 75-25.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still,
which is about as good as it ever gets for the bear, probably.
Yeah, you're highly favored.
I mean, most of these, a lot of these videos are just the ones that, like, 20 years ago, that when you'd go to, like, Texas Trophy Hunter Convention or something, these videos are like, they have the rhythm and production quality of porn. They're like deer snuff films or something. They're like, it's like the, and like, it's kind of going along with cheesy, whatever needle drop music was back then. And then it's just like, bam. And then everyone's all kind of excited and adrenaline out and shaking hands too many times and everything. Like, but most of those that like that we were looking at were just kind of for the comedy of how easy it is, like the timed feeder, and there's just like, you know,
like I said, there's totally different kinds of hunting.
Yeah,
I remember me and my friend Duncan once we were doing the sci-fi show where we were searching for Bigfoot. And we went, and we were in the Pacific Northwest, and we went to this spot that was like this weird little diner, and we ate lunch there, and they had a television on that was showing a compilation of all the kill shots on deer. So it was like an hour-long video.
Oh my God.
Boom! The deer getting shot in the rib cage and jumping up in the air and running to his death. And it was like a cum shot compilation.
Yeah, that's
like people are too lazy to watch the whole porn. You just want to see people jizz. That's what it was like.
There's something like some of these videos. It's like there's one woman taking her kid who looks like he's 10 squirrel hunting, and I don't the whole thing. Like it's this happy music playing, and then he kills a squirrel. I don't know. It looks like the Zapruder film or something. It's really. I mean, at the time, I wasn't used to hunting, and I was just like, oh yuck, this is like. But then, yeah, there's some of them that are just, there's a video for, and it's an ad for something called the Barnes Varmint Grenade. It's just like a, it's like a bullet that just vaporizes groundhogs. And in the Silicon Valley writer's room, I was just saying, you got it, like, I guarantee, like, there's vegans in the room. It's like, and they were laughing. It's so, it's like watching Monty Python. It looks so silly. But it is an animal getting blown away. But like it's so
you got
oh no, you got the Barnes not this one no that's
what is this?
You got to go to the ad because the guy's voice is like the Barnes Varmint Grenade.
Let me see what is that?
Go back up.
I can't tell which.
Oh,
one
down go down the one
like this.
Oh yeah, try is that the one? Maybe.
Barnes doesn't make only all copper bullets. The Varmint Grenade is a new lead-free varmint bullet that gives explosive
results. I apologize to anyone.
Originally developed for military applications, the bullet has a copper tin composite core. This highly frangible core greatly reduces the chance of ricochets.
Oh,
the new flat base hollow cavity bullet remains intact at ultra-high velocities, yet fragments instantly on impact. Here's how a 36-grain, 22-caliber varmint grenade bullet reacts when hitting a grape.
Oh, my God.
Here's another view in slow motion. The varmint grenade bullet comes completely apart while it's still inside the grape.
Oh, wow.
Here's what happens when a 62-grain, 6-millimeter varmint grenade strikes a cherry tomato.
That's out of sync.
That's just over an inch in diameter.
That's way out of sync.
Look again. Here's what's left of the bullet.
Wow.
The varmint grenade vaporizes brown squirrels and prairie dogs at extended range.
The thing is, it's
the
like
coyote doesn't get it, don't
coyote
worry.
And bobcat pelts are virtually undamaged.
Anyway.
Delivers sniper-like accuracy.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
Barnes is a famous ammunition manufacturer. They make copper bullets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so that's they're a known. This isn't like a fringe.
No. They make great bullets, and so I guess they branched out into the
the
groundhog killing. People hate those little fucking groundhogs and prairie dogs. Rather, prairie dogs leave holes, and a lot of horses and cows step in them and break their legs.
Groundhogs are.
Yeah. Especially prairie dogs. There's a lot of videos of. There's a video of a Brock Lesnar from the UFC shooting prairie dogs with a 50 caliber rifle.
What?
Yeah, which is very similar.
Those are the bullets that are like a.
Yeah, they're like your forearm.
Yeah.
It's so crazy, and these things just fucking explode.
Someone brought one of those out to my place, and
here it is: prairie dog hunting with Brock Lesnar.
Every time that thing was fired, it was so loud. There's like a shockwave you can see in the air.
Yeah. Well, it's an enormous round.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That's not a 50 cal. That's just a regular rifle.
He doesn't need a gun to kill. He's like a...
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't him with the 50 cal. No, he's retired from fighting. He went to back to the WWE, and he does that. And I think that's all he does now.
Wow.
See if you find 50 cal. Did you look up 50 caliber?
Yeah,
Brock Lesnar, prairie dog, and then look up 50 caliber. I might have conflated him with with someone else who was shooting prairie dogs of 50 calibers. There it is, Brock Lesnar. Okay. Oh, interesting. They might have taken it down. He might have gotten too much hit. Look at that. Here we go.
It's like, oh, yeah, there it is. It's the same day, just a different gun.
Oh, God.
That's a very different gun, though. That's the 50 cal.
Yeah, that's the...
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Video. Scroll back up so I can see what the title says there. Brock Lesnar murdering prairie dogs with 50 caliber sample rifle. Where's PETA?
Oh, God.
Where is PETA? What do you want to do, PETA? Yeah. You want him to die with a regular rifle better? Like, what's the difference? That's the thing. Is it ethical to shoot him with a 50 cal? Well, it's not unethical.
I was just at the beginning of the video.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, he's not even bracing it on it. Ugh.
No, he's huge. That's not a normal human, man. That's a Viking. That's what Vikings used to be like.
I remember, he's got to be straight, pure Viking.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's like, he had probably like a Viking grandma and
he's
a
from
Viking
the
grandpa.
Upper, like,
Minnesota.
The Vikings all kind of, I mean, the Norwegians all settled in that area, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, my favorite example of Vikings is Iceland. That's like more strong men. Come from Iceland, like guys who win
in
those strongman competitions.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Vice did a whole piece on it.
Isn't that where you run like a it's like.
No, that's just, it's mostly like barrels over the top of like goalposts and they pick up cars.
I'm thinking Iron Man or
yeah. You're thinking of Iron Man.
Yeah, the strongman is the. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're just giants. It's like that guy Thor from the Game of Thrones, the guy who was the mountain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Perfect example. Like, preposterously huge men, and if you were alive, 2,000 years ago, and those guys showed up on your shore, animal skins over their dick, holding a sword, it was over.
Yeah, they went up the rivers and just
your
raped
village was
and,
over.
Just raped everybody.
Yeah, and, raped and murdered everybody.
Just a bunch of Brock Lesnar's coming.
Yeah, that's literally what it was, which is really crazy to imagine that we've come so far that now, now the result is this guy's out there shooting prairie dogs.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, those
placate
guns.
Him. Do whatever you can to keep him calm. Give him a gun. Let him shoot the prairie dog.
Yeah, there's a former Marine country singer here that him and he's like a gun expert, but he brought one of those out. And yeah, like I said, like me and my friend just started laughing every time someone fired. It was so absurdly loud. And just, like, you can feel this wave go across your face. And I guess those bullets go like 2 miles or something. Like, didn't somebody in Afghanistan or somebody set a world record with a 50 caliber?
Was it a 50 cal?
Oh, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Like,
I know there's one video. There's a crazy, find this video, where a guy shoots a deer with a 50 caliber and misses the deer but still kills it. He kills it because the bullet passes right by the deer's head.
Oh, God.
And the force of the bullet passing by the deer's head sucks its eyes out of its head.
Oh, Jesus.
And just immediately pulverizes his brain.
Okay, I don't feel like such a wuss then for being like...
No, it's crazy.
Just the shockwave that thing... And this is with... like noise-canceling headphones earplugs in. It's just like...
No, it's a preposterously loud round.
Also, but, like, yeah, and it looks like a Estes rocket or whatever. Like,
yeah, it's a big round. It looks like, like a Red Bull can.
Yeah.
So this is... Yeah, that's how big it is. Look at the size of that. So see if you can find the deer... The guy kills it. That's it. That's definitely it.
Yeah, somehow
so he shoots, and the deer goes down, but then when he gets there... So he's sighting in on this deer. And watch this.
Oh, no.
Watch this. He shoots it. The round goes off.
Oh,
and the deer goes
Jesus.
Down. Right? But so you think he shot the deer, right? So they go over, and there's no wound on the deer.
Wow.
It didn't hit it at all.
Oh, God.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's kind of hideous.
Like, it sucked his eyes out of his head.
Oh,
and
God.
And his mouth. Like, the deer's instantaneously dead, but with no impact.
I guess that wouldn't be a horrible way
Watch
to
this,
go.
Though, when they show it. See, it just passes by his head.
Oh, man.
Watch this. Watch it in slow motion.
Oh,
it doesn't hit him.
Oh my God! I wonder what the range of just sucking eyeballs out is for that. That's so awful.
It looks like I mean, it looks like he misses it by like an inch. I mean, if you watch the vapor trail, I mean, it's just passing right by his head, or her head, and then the deer's like, "That's a wrap."
Wow!
Isn't that crazy? Just the force of it passing through the air.
I didn't grow up hunting like I don't. It's sort of. I mean, even like my family on my dad's side did, but like I didn't. So it all just seems like hideous to me. But then, I mean, you know, it's depending on, I mean, there's, well, like New Zealand, or you know, it's like.
They have to do it.
It is our, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing about
the wild
pigs here.
I mean, Native Americans, like, that was their. Yeah, and the wild pigs are really, actually, really bad for the environment.
There's are you still connected on here? We've got like a weird feedback. You hear that? You don't hear that?
No, we're good.
I hear a very low hum, but I mean, it's okay. Super quiet. Yeah. To the fan.
Just, I should probably go around three just to okay. Catch my flight. Just, but anyway.
Where are you headed to?
I'm going to go back to L.A. I'm in L.A. for the summer.
Oh, yeah? Too hot here?
Too hot.
Texas people like to do that. They bail. They either go to Colorado. A lot of folks here go to Aspen.
Yeah, everyone goes to Colorado, and they go to New Mexico, too. I grew up in Albuquerque, and my dad was always griping about Texans coming in.
How long have you been here?
Well, in Texas since, wow, 88. But Austin, 94.
Yeah?
Yeah, moved. Was in New York for Beavis and Butthead for like a year and a half, I guess.
I remember I came out here once for a UFC, and you were backstage, and I was surprised. I was like, what? This guy likes the UFC?
It's weird. Like, yeah, I got, I'm not even a big sports fanatic, but for some reason I got really addicted to UFC.
You're missing it. It's here this weekend.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a big
Saturday
one.
Saturday night.
Yeah. My friend was asking if I was going, and I got to get back. But wait, who is it again?
Well, the main event. No,
are
I'm going to watch. I haven't been in the audience of a UFC in 20 years.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I get you're to only just there sit. When you're I'm only going to watch, which is great. I'm not working. I'm excited.
Wow.
And so the main event is Calvin Kattar versus Josh Emmett, which is they're two featherweight contenders. But there's Cowboy Cerrone is on the undercard fighting
Nice.
Joe Lozon. Just a bunch of very good fights.
Wait, is it
very exciting fights.
Cowboy Cerrone's from Texas, isn't he, or no?
No, he's from Colorado.
Oh, yeah, Colorado, that's right.
Yeah. So here, Tim Means versus Kevin Holland. That's a great fight. Joaquin Buckley versus, I don't know, Albert Duraev, but Joaquin Buckley is a fucking assassin. There's great fights, really great fights.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, that guy Duraev is the favorite. Ooh, interesting.
Wait, who he fought someone, didn't he beat somebody big?
Buckley?
No, Duraev.
I don't know. Let me see what his record is.
I kind of stopped watching for a little while, then started getting back into it. But I used to be addicted to it.
You were addicted to it.
Yeah, it was the when I saw it when you were there, that was like 2011 or something in Austin.
Oh, he fought Anthony. Oh, he's going to fight Anthony Hernandez. That got canceled. Now he's fighting Buckley. So this is only his second fight in the UFC.
Oh, maybe
and
I'm
his
thinking
favorite
of
over Buckley, which
else.
Is wild. He must be talented. I did not see his first fight, though.
Lozon's been at it forever.
Forever. This is kind of a retirement fight for both guys. I mean, Donald Cerrone is in a new movie right now with Gina Carano, actually a Western, that's coming out soon.
Oh, he acts? He's been...
Yeah, he's starting to act. I mean, that's what he's going to transition to, I believe, you know, out of fighting. He's going to transition to acting. And he's perfect for that. He's such a character.
A bunch of MMA people have gotten into
acting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're casting films, like, that's got to be one of the weirdest parts of making a movie. Like, you have this idea, you write it out,
yeah.
And then you meet a bunch of people, and you got to get them to try to become this thing that you've created on paper.
I actually am proud of who I've cast. I think I'm pretty good at, but it's my least favorite part of the process. The audition part of it, like, I mean, it's like going on some weird, horribly awkward date every 5 minutes for however many hours you're doing it. 'Cause every person comes in and they want to, they're looking for any sign on your face of how they did. And you yeah. want, it's, a lot of times they're really great, and you want to tell them they're great, but they may not just be the type for the part, and you want to say that, but all they want to hear is that they got the part. And
yeah.
There's nothing you can say that's – so you just kind of go, okay, thank you, and you know, you want to give the part to everybody, but you can only pick one. It's just – it's such a – yeah, and also when you're – yeah, if you wrote everything and you're hearing it done horribly, sometimes that makes you – shakes your confidence in the material. And I mean, usually, though, like my first experience with it was – because, well, I mean, doing animation, I was doing a lot of the voices myself or most of them, but like with Office Space – when I did start having good people read for it, it makes the writing seem better. Like, actors can make the writings, make the dialogue seem better than it is sometimes, I think. Like, I remember thinking for some of the, I mean, then sometimes it doesn't work at all and it makes you think it's horrible, but I remember thinking, wow, I'm a pretty good writer. But a lot of it's just because the actors are just making it seem so real.
Terry Crews was the perfect president for that movie. Did you have him in mind? Like, who did you have in mind when you wrote
it? No, I mean, I think maybe it's okay to say now. You're not, like, I was sort of thinking Benicio del Toro, actually.
Oh, he would have been great, too.
Yeah, I mean, and he turned it down, I think. But I don't even know if it got that far. Once, when Terry auditioned, he just stole the part. Like, I was showing it to people. It's one of those things where when something's that good, you just keep watching it, you know. And I kept and I just kept watching it. And
he's a rare funny guy who's also jacked.
Yeah, I was just saying that. Like he's not many people can pull that off, and
very few.
He kind of has to be jacked.
He might be
funny.
The only one.
Yeah,
he might be the only guy that's built like that that is really funny.
There's something that where it all works, like with his face. Yeah. And when he was doing that, I kept going like, wait, this is amazing. Like this, he's the president and he's that jacked and he's making these puzzled faces and he's got so much charisma.
And he was a porn star and a WWE champion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was the character a WWE? Look at him there. Look at him. I mean,
when he gets that, like,
how many people are funny and they're built like that? It was like fucking nobody.
I know, it's really rare.
So rare. And you buy into it, like it makes you laugh.
Yeah.
And when you wrote it, did you write as a WWE champion? Was that already in there before Terry was there?
That was in there, yeah. That was in there. And so I guess, like, I actually auditioned, not for that part, for some of the other ones, a lot of WWE people. And a lot of them are decent actors, but there's something just that wasn't funny in the right way. But they didn't read for that. But we had at one point Tank Abbott read for, not for that part, but for I think the doctor in the hospital. And he was actually pretty good. He was pretty funny, actually.
Smart dude.
Yeah, like he's...
He's a surprisingly smart guy who just likes to beat the shit out of people.
Yeah, he seemed smart. He seemed like a funny... I mean, I've heard he's scary or something, but I thought he was really
He's a
funny.
Very nice guy.
Yeah, he seemed like a nice guy.
I've gotten hammered with him before. He actually just came upon hard times, I believe.
Yeah, he had a
liver cancer. He had a transplant? Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yeah. He had a liver donor, yeah. He had some...
Which is not surprising if you know how hard that guy partied.
Well, he was saying to it, because I came close to casting him for... He had read for a couple different things, but he was really... Really nice guy, but he'd say, like, okay, you guys can call me. I might be drunk. Like, he kept saying I might be drunk. But he showed me I guess all the fights he would do these, like, pit fights on the beach for the Hells Angels or something. And he just, like, takes these teeth out and goes, like, I just finally got these so I can just take them out. Because, I don't know, teeth kept getting knocked out or something. But, what a legend.
Yeah, he was... a real character in the early days of fighting.
Yeah.
And he was the first guy that I ever saw that figured out to put on gloves.
Like, oh, that was...
You didn't have to wear gloves back then.
Oh.
When he first started fighting, gloves were optional, and he did it to protect his hands. Very smart.
Did he invent those kind that, or I guess were those, not full boxing gloves, but like the MMA?
No, he definitely didn't invent them. They were around. I think Century might have had them as like bag gloves at one point in time, and he started wearing them. It was him and Vitor Belfort. Those are the two guys, the first guys that I ever saw wear those gloves. And then, but I think Tank was first. And then they wound up being a thing where people would wear them, and then it became standard.
Yeah, those old ones were great. You know who John Chris Felucci, the Ren and Stimpy guy, was way into that, and he claims to have given Spike TV the idea for the UFC reality show because he was saying, "Yeah, you guys gotta follow Tank Abbott around when he's installing air conditioners, and you get to see what he's like during the day, you know." And
he installed air conditioners?
I think that's what John said.
He really?
Was doing back then, yeah. Like, had a regular, some kind of...
nine to five. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's what John Chris Felucci
Yeah, I don't know if he came up with the idea. But
that kind of really boosted the UFC.
That was it. Yeah, that was 2005.
Yeah.
That was the time Idiocracy came out.
Yeah, I was doing the... I was in the editing stages of it when I started watching that, actually. Got me hooked.
Yeah, it got everybody hooked. The finals with Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin was this insane fight that during the fight, the amount of people increased substantially.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Which was like people were calling people up and go, "Oh, my God, you got to watch Spike TV."
Yeah, I was watching it.
This fight
is
insane.
Yeah, it was live on Spike. It wasn't a pay-per-view, right?
Yeah, it was live on Spike. It wasn't a pay-per-view. Nobody was really watching the UFC. I mean, there was pay-per-views that were still on. I think back then we were just on DirecTV. I don't know if we had gotten back on cable yet, but it just wasn't that popular.
Were you on it? You were commentating at that point? Or
I started commentating a couple of years before that. I was commentating in 2002. That's when I started.
Oh, wow.
I actually started in 97. I was the post-fight interviewer.
Oh, really? And
then, yeah, I did that for a couple
of
years. That was in like... UFC 12 was the first one that I did. It was in Dothan, Alabama. We had a fly in and a puddle jumper playing.
I've seen that one, I think. Yeah.
And that was Vitor Belfort made his debut, and he knocked out Trey Teligman and Scott Ferozzo to win the tournament. It was the early days. You could wear shoes back then. It was a completely different sport.
Oh, right. You look at those old ones. They're wearing shoes.
Yeah. You could still pull clothes.
People are pulling ponytails.
Uh-huh. You used to be able to punch people in the nuts. There was a lot of crazy shit that you could get away with back then. But it was a different world. And I did it for a little while, but I thought it was like a novelty. And it was something that as a martial artist, the question was always like, what would happen if a judo guy fought a karate guy? And so the UFC came along and they said, let's see. And so for me, it was exciting just to be there and watch. And I was always a fan of it and a lot of the Japanese organizations. And then it was just I was losing money doing it. And so I quit. And so then I got on Fear Factor. And I would go to once the UFC was purchased by Zuffa, the Fertitta brothers and Dana White, I would go to watch the fights in Vegas. And I became friends with those guys, and they would get me ringside tickets. And I would say, hey, why don't you, do you know about this guy? He's fighting in Japan. Do you know about this guy from Russia? And they would go, hey, you want to do commentary? I was like, no, I don't want to do commentary. I just want to watch fights. Like, I want to do it.
Oh, yeah, you're the voice of it now, though.
It's crazy. It's all because of Dana. Dana talked me into it 20 years ago.
Wow.
And that's the story. Yeah. All right, so Beavis and Butthead, it's out when? What is the date it's out?
Let me get this right. June 23rd.
June 23rd. Okay, so we'll release this.
Paramount Plus.
Yeah. We'll release this the day it comes out so that it juices it out. Look at that. Beavis and Butthead do the universe. I'm fucking very excited. Very excited to see this.
Hope
streaming
everyone likes it.
June 23rd, and it is it on? What's it on?
Paramount Plus. Yeah, another... and then it's where Yellowstone is.
Oh.
And
okay, cool.
And then... new episodes come right after that. There's episodes where they're old. Yeah, if you click on that one, there's we're doing a little spinoff where they're middle-aged. And
how many episodes do you guys do?
There's going to be 24, but there's two in each half hour like it used to be.
Oh, nice.
They're going to be watching TikTok videos and music videos. And
when is that going to come out? When is the series due?
August, I think first week of August.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you very much for coming in here, man. I'm a giant fan of everything you've done.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Alrighty.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.